Welcome to another episode of our Slovak Ancestry podcast. My name is Michal Rázus and this podcast is created with the support of podcast industry. Today it is my pleasure to welcome here at our podcast a special guest, Sarah Hinlicky-Wilson. Sarah is an American pastor currently living in Tokyo, Japan. Besides that, Sarah is also an author of several books and a podcaster. Welcome, Sarah. Your story is in some points similar to many of our listeners, but also in the same time it's very different and very special. Maybe we can start with a little bit of introduction of yourself and maybe try to find what is your connection to Slovakia.
Well, thank you, Michal, and thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm really excited to be here. So yes, I come from a Slovak-American family on my father's side. On his mother's side, we go back to the 1800s. We don't actually know the name of the people who immigrated anymore. It's that far back. So it would have been, I think, my great-great-grandparents. And they came from the east of Slovakia in Sabino area and settled in Streeter, Illinois, which wasn't even an incorporated town at the time. But a lot of Slovaks went there. It was one of the first big Slovak settlements in the United States. And they went there to mine coal. They had experience of mining from back in Slovakia. So all of my Slovak grandmother's family came from that area of Illinois. My father's side of the family came later in the early 1900s. I have a great grandmother. She's dead now, but she was born in 1899. And she was the only person I ever met born in the 19th century. And she lived to be 103. So she made it to the 21st century. Wow. So she lived the entire 20th century. Yeah. And she came from central Slovakia near Martin, a small town. And her husband, my great-grandfather, came from the same small town, but quite a bit later. He was in his late teens, and it was 1913, a very good year to leave the Austro-Hungarian Empire. He had a feeling that he would be cannon fodder, as he put it, and he did not want to fight for the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so he followed many others from his town and ended up in Connecticut. And so that is where my father's family of Slovak immigrants landed, in Byram, Connecticut. Byram no longer exists as such. It's part of the greater Greenwich area now. And then in the course of their adult lives, my two grandparents from different parts of the U.S. found each other, but they had their Slovak heritage in common and also their Lutheran Christian faith in common. And that's how they got married and had my dad and his brothers and eventually me. So I am either a third or a fourth generation Slovak American, depending on which side of the family you count.
Wonderful. So, in spite there was already decades since the very first members of your family came to the United States, does your family still keep some kind of a Slovak identity or rituals, or what do you consider yourself, Slovak, American? How is that with this issue?
This has been kind of a lifelong question. You know, my grandfather grew up speaking Slovak. My grandmother grew up hearing it, though her family was already speaking English at home with the children, so she never spoke it herself. My grandfather was a pastor in Slovak Lutheran congregation, so he did sermons and services in Slovak. So my father and his brothers definitely grew up being very conscious of being Slovak Americans, of having the Christmas traditions, some of the special foods like kapusnica or poppy seed kolach. They were aware that they did not share the same ethnic heritage as the wealthy WASPs, as we call them, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants or Dutch or some of the other more Western European people in New Jersey where they grew up. But I would say my father, he's the oldest of the five. He kept it most strongly, partly because he opted back into it in adulthood by going, actually our whole family moved to Slovakia in the year it became independent. That wasn't even the original plan, but that's how it turned out, in 1993. And he learned the language again as an adult. He'd heard words, but never grew up speaking it. And so my family actually lived in Slovakia. And I think for me, I was, one generation farther removed, but I think when I was small, it was quite important to me to figure out how I was different or special, or, what being just another American wasn't very interesting. And because there was just enough Slovak heritage left, I really latched onto it. And then having the opportunity to move there when I was already 17, I kind of hoped it would be like a homecoming, that I would feel like, oh, I was truly a Slovak and belonged. But I would say of my generation, it's probably only me, and I have a second cousin. So that means his grandmother and my grandmother were sisters. He's really into the family ancestry and heritage too, but probably he and I, out of all the many, many cousins in our generation, are the only two left who really care and feel strongly about it.
Obviously, you have a really strong tradition of being pastors, so your family probably has a very strong connection to religion. So what was the reason? Why have you come to Slovakia? Was something behind it connected with your profession or with your family tradition, or what was the reason?
Yeah, you're very right. You know, the only ancestor way back in history in Slovakia we know anything at all about is a Jan Hnilický from the early 1600s who became a Lutheran pastor. And we know that he studied at the University of Halle in Germany, because at the time there was no school for pastoral preparation in Slovakia. They actually had to leave and go to Germany to study. We've never been able to find out anything else about this guy, but there are pastors, you know, 400 years ago in our family line. And then, yeah, my great-grandfather, the one who left in 1913, he wanted to go to seminary, but he already had a family and there was no option at the time to prepare to be a pastor when you were already married with children. And then my grandfather became a pastor, my father became a pastor, and even I did eventually. But the reason we went to Slovakia is because, as I said, my father, you know, had this strong family connection to Slovakia. So when the communist regime ended in 1989, another family friend, Paul Brnjar, as we say in American English, but Brnjar in a better Slovak pronunciation, he had visited Czechoslovakia often during the 1980s. And, you know, when things were opening up, he said to my dad, you know, you've always wanted to teach at the seminary level. Would you be willing to go to Slovakia? They have floods of students coming in now that they can freely study theology, and they have nowhere near enough faculty to manage it all. So that is why our family moved there. And for 6 years, my mother and father and younger brother lived in Slovakia while my dad taught at the Protestant faculty of Comenius University. I was only there full-time for 1 year before I went back to the U.S. for college, but it was a very formative year for me. And yes, of course, you know, it was for this long religious heritage reason that we ended up going there.
Well, we all are very sensitive in our teenage, and I guess that this was also with you, and that being faced to the new environment, you probably had maybe cultural shock, or how did you feel? What were your impressions from Slovakia when you first came?
I mean, when I first came, I just immediately fell in love with it. I lived in a small town in upstate New York. I thought it was very boring. I was excited to see the world, and I had this personal connection to Slovakia. So I was just thrilled with absolutely everything. We moved to the small town of Sveti Jur, which is the first kind of town outside of Bratislava. And I was just completely smitten with the vineyards and the castle ruins and the old churches and the boys. That was a significant part of the charm. The food as well. The people there were lovely. They really embraced us and welcomed us in. So I just kind of fell head over heels in love with the place. Of course, you know, culture shock did set in. But it wasn't, you know, at first for me, it was just the great adventure and the love of something new and exotic. But after a while, you know, like not having, for an American to have no access to peanut butter or tuna fish, this was a long time ago in Slovakia. Now you can easily get those things, but in 1993, you could not. And learning to do laundry differently and different patterns of paying visits and paying bills and all these kind of things. It definitely, there were times when we all felt pretty frustrated, but I mean, that's universal. Anyone moving to any culture different from their own is going to hit up against things that are obvious to the people all around them, but make absolutely no sense to the foreigner in their midst.
Yes, and this is something that I wanted to ask, because in 1993, there were still very few people from the foreign countries, and especially Americans in Slovakia, I guess, than it is today, and not so many people spoke English. So what was it from this side? How did you feel? And was it easy or difficult for you to maybe make new friends and connections?
Yes, there were very few foreigners at the time, and there was no internet at the time. Try to imagine that. We communicated with family back home by writing or typing letters and putting them in the mail. And phone calls were so expensive. We talked about 5 minutes every month only with my grandparents, and that was it. So yes, that was definitely challenging. On the other hand, we were connected to a high school in Bratislava, the Evangelitske Lyceum, which its main feature was that it had a bilingual program in Slovak and English, and English was taught by American teachers. So I ended up volunteering there to work in the library, and there were worship services there. So we became friends with this large group of American teachers there. But as it turns out, quite a number of the kids in Sveti Jur that were associated with our church also went to that school because it was affiliated with the Lutheran church. And the program was so good that they all had outstanding English. So in fact, it was kind of a crutch for me because they spoke English so well already that I could talk to them easily, and I have to learn Slovak to talk to them. I did manage to speak Slovak, you know, at a conversational level pretty well by the end of the year, never very elegantly or grammatically, and I never studied in it or anything. But yeah, that was kind of how my social needs were met, was with this group of Americans and then English-speaking Slovak students.
Wow. Do you still speak any Slovak, by the way? Do you still remember something?
Trošku.
Výborne, excellent. Maybe if you
Thank
can...
Thank you. Oh, I was just saying, it's been a long time since I spoke regularly. When I was writing my book, I did spend a lot of time trying to bring it back to life. And when I visited Slovakia last in 2017 and 2018, I used it some. But I live in Japan now, and you can imagine there are not many opportunities to speak Slovak in Japan. Though I have met a few Slovaks here, but yeah, not very common.
Yeah, and that was my another question. You just mentioned your book, so experience in Slovakia probably affected you enough so that you have decided to write your experience in a book with a very nice and interesting name, I'm a Brave Bridge. And I also like the subtitle of it, which is, if I'm not mistaken, American Girls Hilarious and Heartbreaking Year in the Fledgling Republic of Slovakia.
That's right, very good.
What was hilarious and what was heartbreaking without revealing too much from the book?
Well, no, I don't mind at all. So hilarious is, it's just a classic cross-cultural confusion tale. This is just simply what happens to everybody when you go to a new country and you think you're using the right word, and in fact, you're using a very bad word without even realizing it. That happened to me as well as to all my family members. All the silly little things that you take for granted that are all wrong, all of the confusions and so forth. And also a fair amount of comedy around teenage romance. But of course, that's also where the heartbreaking part comes in, is a lot of, well, let's just say that I was never very good at expressing my emotions, even in my own language. And then when there was a language barrier, it became that much more difficult. But there was also the added complication that I was the American, and the American who couldn't speak very well was kind of a blank slate, I think, for the young men of the town to project their own imaginations onto. So a lot of the story is just the very ridiculous back and forth of teenagers' emotions, which are indeed both hilarious and heartbreaking. But I suppose a bigger part of the story is also hoping that Slovakia would prove to be my long-lost homeland. And I did, and I do love Slovakia very much, but the year there taught me is, like it or not, honey, you are an Američanka. You are not a Slovenka. But the kind of American I am is definitely very much affected by this experience, both of growing up in a Slovak ethnic family and then having this time in Slovakia. It was very formative of my early years and kind of launched me into being an international person. So it is important to who I am, but I am not Slovak the way a Slovak is Slovak. I'm Slovak the way an American who comes from a Slovak family is Slovak. And it's real, but it's certainly not the same thing.
It is. And that's very nice that you're kind of keeping this piece of little land in your heart. So have you...
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned that you came back to Slovakia In 2017-18, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes. How did the country change in your eyes? Or maybe have you been any other times in Slovakia since the last time in 1993? Or what are your feelings? How much progress we did in Slovakia? What do you think?
It's very strange for me now. So my parents and brother stayed there till 1999, and then they moved back to the United States. And I think from after that, I visited maybe twice in the first decade of the 21st century, and then not until 2017. And so, of course, the change was dramatic in that time. And so now when I visit, I feel like I have like those Google glasses on that let you see virtual reality. So like I'm looking and I'm half seeing 1993 or at the latest 1999. And then I'm seeing the current year kind of laid on top of each other. And it's very startling. You know, when you live with change, it happens gradually and you stop seeing it. But when you're away for long periods of time, it's just so like Sveti Jur now has this huge grocery store and all the little tiny potravini and zelovots that my mother used to have to, you know, go to each one in turn to get our food from, they're all long since out of business. And the restaurants we used to go to are out of business. And now Bratislava has shopping malls and these, you know, super highways and the whole promenade along the Danube is so nicely built up and it has all these fancy new buildings and the old town is just packed full of tourists. And I, you know, when we came there in 1993, it was empty on a Friday night because everybody went out to the village to go back to see Starka and Starki. You know, they didn't stay in the city and certainly no tourists were coming yet. So it is, you know, it's still the same Slovakia, but the new stuff in it is very, very obvious and startling to me now.
Often when I speak with Americans, people have an observation that Slovaks do not smile as much as people in America. They are not that friendly at the first sight. What is your impression? Is that correct or not really?
Huh. I can't say I ever noticed that, but it might have been because when we moved there, we moved right into this town and we were immediately part of a community. So maybe my experience was less typical because I didn't have to work my way into finding a place among Slovak people. I was just set right in the middle of them and they were very welcoming to us. I would say maybe in the shops, it's true. I always had the feeling that shopkeepers were never happy to see me or my money, which doesn't really make any sense to me as an American. But I think that's the legacy of the communist period more than the Slovak character.
Is there any way, how are you using your experience from Slovakia in your current profession? Is it helping you to understand a different culture since now you are living in Japan? Is there any kind of crossing point?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So, you know, I wrote this book, this about my year of being 17 in Slovakia, when my husband and son and I moved back to the United States after 8 years in France. And we didn't know where we were going next. And we were in the US for 2 years before moving to Japan. So most of the first draft of the book was written in that 2 years in between. And I think in a way I wrote it then because I needed to process how I had become an international person in my adulthood with this long time in France. And in a way, without knowing it, I was preparing myself for moving to Japan, which is kind of with the title, I Am a Brave Bridge. It's this, I mean, it's based on a joke between Slovak and English about smelly most. But the idea for me is realizing that I don't really belong in any one place, but I'm more like a person who bridges between them. And that was something that my year in Slovakia gave me. And so what I found when I came here and started working as the pastor at the English-speaking congregation of Tokyo Lutheran Church, I actually realized it's a very good fit for me because I know what it feels like to be a foreigner. And I do have Japanese people who attend my English service, but I also have people from lots of different countries, from Asia, Europe, North America, Africa. And I kind of get it. I think it's a good fit for me precisely because I am this brave bridge with this formative experience of living in Slovakia as being an in-between person. And I see where people are coming from and I know how important it is to feel welcome, to have a home, to have something to hold you together that isn't primarily culture, because we all come from different cultures. So, I mean, one of the nice things about having the religious bond is that it kind of transcends culture. You know, it'll take the distinctive forms in each culture, but it's at like a common ground we can all meet on. So I think, you know, although, as I said, I don't have a whole lot of direct use for the Slovak language or my time in Slovakia and what I do, I think it prepared me for this kind of life and profession of creating international community. And I'm really grateful for that.
Is your heritage also affecting in any way your son? Is he going to carry at least a little part of your experience and of your roots further to the future?
I hope so. But in my case, my son is adopted. He's from Guatemala, and his heritage is mostly Mayan Indian. So, honestly, for me and my husband, that was part of the, my husband also has a very international person identity. And so it kind of made sense for us to expand in yet another generation by having a son who comes from another country originally. But he has been to Slovakia when he was small, and he knows about my book. He's read parts of it, and he eats Slovak food when I cook it. So I hope that even though he doesn't have the direct ethnic connection, that it will still somehow be special to him in his adulthood.
I see. Well, at least he can be honorary Slovak, and I'm sure he will be great honorary Slovak. That's for sure.
I think so. The three of us had dinner together at the home of the Slovak ambassador here in Tokyo, and I know he was very impressed with that. So hopefully that made a good impression on him.
And this is great that in spite now the Slovaks are living in all around the world, and maybe they have just like 1% of the Slovak roots in their blood now, because they are mixed with all kinds of other ethnics and religions and all kinds of other cultures. But still, the most mm-hmm. important is, in my eyes, that we can always speak together, no matter how connected we are. But there is something that is over us and or bigger than us, and it's great that we can share this our common experience.
Oh, I think so too. I think it's a real blessing and a gift. And it's kind of fun and surprising. You never quite know when you'll meet your next Slovak. But like I said, even here in Japan, there aren't many, but I've met a few, and it's been a really precious connection to have.
Yes. I think that maybe if we can now switch to one more topic, and this is, you are also a podcaster. You are the writer of the books. Are there any other books that you wrote about Slovakia, or do you have in your podcast topics that are dealing with our heritage?
Well, most of my writing and podcasting is about theology, which is my main vocation, though, you know, there's definitely some intermingling, as you observed. It's part of my deep Slovak heritage, also this Lutheran heritage and being pastors. I can say, though, that my father, his name is Paul Hinlicky, he has written a book about a Slovak theologian named Samuel Stefan Osuski, who is basically was unknown in the English speaking world until my dad wrote this book. But my dad discovered Osuski's writings during that period that he lived in Slovakia. And Osuski foresaw the coming crisis of both Nazi fascism and Soviet communism, and wrote kind of prophetic warnings about them from a theological point of view. And my dad was so impressed by this man's foresight and insight into the problems that were coming soon to Slovakia in the 1930s, that he wanted to, you know, give a picture of this man to the English-speaking world. So he wrote a book about him. So that, I would say, that is our family's big contribution to making, other big contribution maybe, to making Slovakia better known in the English-speaking world.
So where can people find your books and your works?
Well, you can find I Am a Brave Bridge on Amazon, of course, or any other bookselling platform you like to use, or you can go right to thornbushpress.com. That's my small independent press, and that gives you some other options for also accessing ebooks and audiobooks. But most people use Amazon, so you will certainly find it there.
Well, thank you very much for doing this great job with kind of promoting Slovak culture, history, and even religions here in Slovakia. And also, thank you for coming to our today's podcast. And maybe if you can say...
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Maybe if you can say last goodbye or maybe greeting to our Slovak listeners, but in Slovak.
Okay. Pozdravujem vám doma. Ďakujem veľmi pekne.
Thank you very much. This was Sarah Hinlicky-Wilson from Tokyo, Japan. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Michal.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was all for today, and I am looking forward to you next week. You were listening to Slovak Ancestry podcast with Michal Rázus, created with the support of Podcast Industry. You can find us at Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast. If you have an interesting family story and you would like to share it, feel free to contact me via email in the description.